This is the Hervoy Moritz Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, it's the second hour, and funny comment from State Duma Deputy Vitaly Milonov, known for his active opposition to all things LGBT. He said on Russian Federal TV that, quote, the era of iPhone soy cuckolds is coming to an end, and the war is giving them a chance to become real men. I thought that was amusing. He's got a point. So we all know that saying, you know, good times create weak men, you know, hard times create strong men. I forget the quote, but I think many have heard it. And so we're at that point in the cycle now where hard times are going to be creating tough men. Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, has come out and said, Ukraine has become a completely totalitarian, Nazi-like state. So we're hearing, you know, such rhetoric. And Representative Matt Gaetz, Thomas Massie and Matt Gaetz have been continuing to grill the, talk about push in the Congress, the January 6th false flag. Those are my words, but he basically came out and said, feds are like cockroaches. You see one outside the walls, there's probably 10 more behind the walls that you don't see. America deserves to know the truth about the involvement of federal agents on January 6th. He's talking as well about Ray Epps, I think is the name, and who clearly was, I mean, if you ask me, clearly it looks like to have been a fed or working with the feds, and he was caught on video telling people to, you know, commit illegal acts, to go into the Capitol, where it seems like, and people were telling him no. So again, this is clear evidence that this is a false flag event to drum up this domestic terror theory. And PayPal is continuing on its rampage. PayPal shuts account of parents group that campaigned to keep schools open during the pandemic. Us for them is unable to access thousands of British pounds in donations due to the, quote, nature of their activities. And that group fought to keep schools open during the pandemic. How insane is that? And I have seen responses, people tweeting, they're canceling their, Jack D, who's got over 500,000 followers on Twitter. I don't know who he is, but he's probably some wealthy or influential dude. He says, I'm in the process of canceling my PayPal account. Big tech companies that feel they can bully people for questioning mainstream groupthink don't deserve anyone's business. Here's another guy, a football pundit, also over 500,000 followers on Twitter, Matt Letizier, says, that's my PayPal account closed along with my wife's. Good riddance to tin pot dictators. I think this is what more people, if they feel like it, should be doing, canceling any of these, canceling your accounts with any such institutions and finding alternatives. I will use a Russian Mir account. I will use whatever, when Reddit started to, for my Geopolitics and Empire podcast, when Reddit started to take down posts of their own accord, I stopped using Reddit, banned from Patreon. I'm just not going to use any of this stuff. Find all alternatives, and it's funny, I had a second PayPal account that I had opened while in Kazakhstan, and it was still operating, so I could have secretly continued to use PayPal, but I just quickly closed it. I'm like, I don't want to have anything to do. I'm completely disgusted, and probably more companies as we go on will continue, will deplatform and do this sort of thing, but we just got to, meanwhile, continue surviving. And apparently Canada has agreed to lift pandemic border measures. So I think you can go into Canada now or soon without being injected with DARPA, Davos, DARPA gene therapy, without the app or injections. So finally, Canada has gone that route. And what else is going on? The Russians continue on Russian TV joking about nuking Berlin and turning Britain into a Martian wasteland in just 3 minutes. So fun times. And let me remind you Also that if you, just give us a follow on the socials. It's really easy. It takes, a minute of your time. Gab, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Getter, subscribe on YouTube. If you're not, subscribe on Odyssey or Rumble. That's one easy way to help us out here on TNT Radio.
Factual news as you need it.
They are a reliable source.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All righty. I have back for the second time from FEMA Region 11 in the North American Union, Terry Wolf, author of Fire in the Rabbit Hole, seen by millions on TikTok. He's even been shown on, Alex Jones' show and elsewhere. You can find him at wolfpox.com and winterchristian.substack.com. What's going on, Terry?
Well, there's always something good going on. Thanks for having me on again. I personally just saw that Whitney Webb's book, One Nation Under Blackmail, is apparently out today, I think they said. So I'm looking forward to getting my copy of One Nation Under Blackmail. That's a very interesting study that I think she's going to do there. And I want to make that a priority to read that.
Although I think I read it was 900 pages. So even if I got it, I probably wouldn't read it until next year, because I'm so backlogged on books. I've got books here that I'm picking up in Croatia that I left like when I was here a few years ago that I still haven't read. And so anyways, how it is. What's the first thing we should look at? There's definitely not a shortage of activities.
How about we start with this story about Mark Carney and his troubles that he might be having related to ESG. ESG is one of these things that is definitely strongly tied in with the whole green movement, the green agenda. Bloomberg had a story that said banks may leave Mark Carney's climate group on legal risks. And they put that under the category on Bloomberg, under the green category. They have business and politics and industry and markets, and they have a special one for green. And so this is related to the ESG score system. And it says JP Morgan is among the banks considering leaving the group that he founded, or that he's a leader of. And climate pledges have been increasingly contentious because, as the article points out, his group is called the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero. It's a coalition to fight climate change. But they're actually going to be, now they're admitting that they are legally vulnerable, because decarbonization, which is we talked about just earlier this week, as being sort of this anti-human, there's no way to decarbonize without destroying society. They're actually going to be legally in trouble. And so investors and banks like JP Morgan are considering leaving. And I think that's a remarkable development to already be happening. The Bank of America is also apparently planning on leaving the coalition. And you know that they're only going to do that because there's going to be a huge lawsuit that would destroy them. If not, otherwise they would certainly go along with it. So the article goes on to kind of explain why it might be a legal problem. But I found that to be just an interesting story that no one's probably going to pick up. But apparently there's even the high level people are thinking they're going too far with the ESG stuff.
Yeah, I found that on your feed. And it's another account I follow. Steve Malloy, who's I think from the UK. Maybe not. But anyways, his feed is also interesting. But he said, you heard it here first. I told you ESG was illegal. Maybe this is some good news. Hopefully this is some good news. They're going too far. They're nuts. And since we're on the theme of decarbonization, the Malthusian eugenicist death cult, doomsday death cult that it really is, Soylent Green death cult. You just can't, they just keep going higher up the mountain in terms of crazy town. Here's an article. Was it just from today, yesterday? Meat-eating men should be banned from having sex, says PETA. Men who eat meat should be banned from having sex, claiming that devouring sausages and schnitzel is a symptom of toxic masculinity, which is killing the planet. Good luck preventing me mating from my mate, number one. Number two, I think there will be a lot of lonely women. I don't know what else to say. It's just total crazy insanity. But the fact that there's people believing this and pushing this, that's dangerous. That can be dangerous. Anyways, your reaction.
It is dangerous. That's the kind of story that, to me, that's them fumbling and, admitting that they don't have a strategy for promoting it anymore. It's just, this is just when they say the quiet part out loud. Like, this is what they've been doing for decades. It's part of the social engineering thing, is to try to use social wedges and propaganda issues to stigmatize certain groups of people that they don't, whoever doesn't go along with their agenda, turn them into a fearful group that people should not associate with. And of course, the ultimate sort of stick they can try to beat you with is you'll never have sex if you believe in this thing. Women won't want to talk to you if you do this thing. And so this is just sort of, to me, is an admission of failure. That's like, we don't know how to prevent people from eating meat, but how about we just tell women don't have sex with you? And then it's just sort of like, will that work? I don't know. Let's try it. Maybe if we just repeat it, we can just bully people into, working that way. So in a way, it's just sort of comical that they think they have that much power that they can dictate what women everywhere are going to start doing, even though you talk to a real woman and, they're not that interested in the soy bug eating, type of man. And it's kind of just a clumsy story to me, where it's like, oops, you didn't even have a cover story there. You just sort of said it out loud.
Just along those similar lines, because the story, it's here. It's from, I got it from Edward Slavsquad, a.k.a. Riley Wagaman, who's been a guest on my podcast, but he's also been a guest here on TNT Radio a number of times, usually with Jesse Zurowell. He can't join me because of the time zone difference. He's out somewhere in Russia. But he recently posted a story. He focuses on Russia because that's where he lives. So he's there on the boots on the ground. And apparently you have the Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Industry and Trade, Denis Manturov, in Russia, urging to change mentality, for Russians to change their mentality and evaluate meat from fly larvae. In the future, consumers will add more and more plant-based raw materials to their diets instead of animal proteins. The state needs to support this direction, and the Russians need to change their attitude towards alternative meat, says Manturov. He believes that the production of alternative products from vegetable protein in Russia needs to be supported, and basically talks about fly larvae. And I love Riley's comment. He says, I think he nails it on the head. He says, Americans will eat bugs. Germans will eat bugs. Ukrainians will eat bugs. Poles will eat bugs. Russians will eat bugs. Strange that we are killing each other while being told to eat bugs by our space lizard overlords. And he's got a point, where if you just take a step back, basically every one of our governments is telling us to do the same thing. Meanwhile, on the TV screen, again, not to say that what's going on between East and West and the military battlefield isn't real, but at the same time, how do you square this? They're all telling us to do the same disgusting dystopian things.
Yeah, I saw a similar thing from Australia, a user account on Twitter called Wittgenstein. He has a lot of interesting stories, and he was talking about an Australian news clip that he has here of different tests that they're doing to just have insect diets, whether they should pulp them into a paste or they should, you know, turn them into a powder and just sprinkle the powder in, because people don't like to look at the bugs when they're eating them. And they're doing all these samples and tests, and they're just trying to openly, you know you hate this. We know you don't want this. We know this is disgusting. The free market, we don't care about the free market. We're not going to try to appeal to consumers. We're going to say, you need to do this. And let's just think of how we can force you to do it. So, you know, whether you put it in vinegar or you, like, they're just experimenting openly with how to change people to want their solution rather than creating the solution that people want. And so it's social engineering. It's despicable. And you're right. It's all the governments doing it to their own people while framing it as if we're in some sort of big, you know, international conflict, but it's just the upper class doing it to the lower class on all sides.
Pretty much. And we got to jump to our first break. Terry's website, wolfpox.com, his latest book, Fire in the Rabbit Hole, which you can get from Jeff Bezos, Stan, or elsewhere. We'll be right back on TNT Radio.
Christina Borgeson on TNT Radio.
3 months after being appointed CIA director in 2017, Mike Pompeo gave a speech in which he said, quote, "It's time to call out WikiLeaks for what it really is, a non-state hostile intelligence service often abetted by state actors in Russia." In January of this year, our intelligence community determined that Russian military intelligence, the GRU, had used WikiLeaks to release data of U.S. victims that the GRU had obtained through cyber operations against the Democratic National Committee. That's all Mike Pompeo talking here. Actually, even today, no proof of this particular allegation by Mr. Pompeo has ever seen the light of day. His characterization of WikiLeaks, which has always been a media organization whose work product was widely picked up and published in other major media outlets, is also inaccurate. Nonetheless, Pompeo and the U.S. intelligence community, aided and abetted by operatives in other nations, has led a ruthless, relentless international intelligence community operation to all but kill WikiLeaks editor-in-chief Julian Assange.
Christina Borgeson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Wokeness is infiltrating churches, and people don't really know what's hitting them.
Critical race theory assumes that racism is everywhere, it is in everything. These ideologies have crept into the church.
I have grown up with this invisible kind of bag of privilege.
And I know, as a white pastor, I have blind spots.
Reparations fits into the scope of the gospel.
It's a racist worldview. You're swimming in reason.
The social justice warriors say, if you're white, you are racist. And if you say that you are not a racist, then you have to be a white supremacist.
I see within evangelicalism today an attack on the very gospel itself.
Social justice doesn't have to do with justice, it has to do with Marxism.
Wokeness is now the dominant academic paradigm on many university and college campuses.
Many of our Christian universities have fallen prey.
I went to an all-black school, raised in a black context. Everything was oppression. White people are racist, cops can't be trusted, and this world is not for us, it's against us. We felt like the government owed us. I have a family, I have children, and I don't have a job. I was just, it was at the darkest point in my life.
Because I was white, would we have to divorce and separate due to my skin color?
Christianity enables people to find forgiveness and redemption. However, Marxism is completely vindictive.
There is no redeemer and there is no redemption in the religion of anti-racism.
I believe that the evangelical church today is going to have to make a decision. Are we going to submit to the culture, or are we going to remain true to the faith and take the consequences?
How the left
is stealing your church. The invasion of the gospel of woke at salemnow.com.
This is TNT Radio, where you meet the entire menagerie of mankind
and some who haven't yet been cataloged.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, we are back. And I thought I'd bring up just another story. I know there's other stuff we wanted to get to, but this one just struck me. I mentioned it during the break, but it's from rmx.news, and it's about Nazis. Basically, German domestic intelligence is running hundreds of fake right-wing extremist social media accounts. I was explaining, I'm sure you've seen the memes. It says, the operation involving fake right-wing accounts has become so big that the feds, the German feds, now have to information share so they don't target each other. You know that meme with like the 20 Spider-Men that are pointing fingers at each other? And it says like NSA, CIA, Fed, or they're all feds. They don't know that when they infiltrate some extremist group. And it says that here, hundreds of the radical Nazis and right-wing extremists online are actually domestic intelligence agencies. And I really don't doubt that my Telegram channel was flooded either by, German or French or British or CIA, NATO, whatever, intelligence with this crazy anti-Semitic radical Nazi content that I had to keep blocking and deleting because it was just nuts. And it was like a wave. It came in after they saw me continuously just deleting and blocking everything. All of a sudden, it's stopped. So, what sort of your reaction to this, Terry?
Absolutely. That's part of the whole PSYOP thing is to create and to associate, guilt through association. If they know that you're a danger because you actually just, call it down the middle and you use facts and you actually are a rational person, they will surround you with crazy people just to make you look crazy. And, whatever can get you censored, whatever can get you banned, they'll just try to flood it. That's what they did with Gab and other social media platforms, Minds. Nobody uses Minds, but it's this free speech platform that had a lot of potential. And they just flooded it with accounts so that the vast majority of accounts are racist and Nazi and crazy. And then, hey, this is free speech. This is what free speech looks like. And then all the normal people don't want to go there because they think it's just a Nazi platform. And I would also say, with them feds, targeting each other, I saw a video of, from the body cam of a cop with, going into a parking lot and pulling over, a drug dealer in the parking lot who's like this obvious drug dealer. And then the guy reaches for something and he shoots him. And then it turns out the guy was like reaching for his badge or something to show him that he was actually an undercover cop. And then the cop is freaking out and getting back up and crying and apologizing because he shot and killed his one of the undercover agents in the parking lot. There was no drug dealer there. And it's the same thing. It's like, they're going to have to. And then the thing about the FBI had something just recently about, wanting to declare domestic terrorism as the biggest threat in America. And then it turns out there's no domestic terrorism happening in America. So now there's pressure on the FBI to fabricate or recategorize all sorts of things as domestic terrorism just to justify their calls and their warnings earlier. So to justify their spending and everything. So this is the world we live in where the people who are supposed to prevent crime and prevent danger are the ones committing it and generating it and creating sting operations and stuff, just like January 6th, just to justify their budgets and keep the narrative going.
I wanted to go back just for a moment. You touched on Minds sort of, I guess you're declaring them the patient deceased. I've interviewed Bill Ottman, the head of Minds, in my podcast, and I still use it. I'm still not calling it in, but for the longest time, I've only got like 230 or something followers, and it's not moving an inch, which is really weird. Yeah. And it's just like, do you think it's dead? Like, I have hope. I wish so much that, Minds could succeed and float and all these other platforms. But I mean, looking at it realistically, it's, at least for me, I mean, there are a few other bigger names that have bigger followings, but the fact that there are, apart from them, it's just not looking good. What's your take on Minds?
Well, if you're a social media platform, if you're not growing, you're dying. And I haven't seen any growth on Minds. I think it was one of the best platforms. I totally support it. I like the idea a lot. They have great features. Of course, I encourage people that I know to go use it, but you know, it. First of all, even just on a basic level, the name Minds is terrible. They should reboot it and rebrand themselves. Minds is just not a good name for any platform. No one wants to say Minds. It's just a tricky word. It's got the DS at the end and stuff. Like if it was Minder or something else, I don't know. They need a rebrand. And besides that, I know it's very obvious that they're being targeted by trolls and bot accounts and stuff. And I would say it's as good as dead if it's not dead. It's sort of one of these communities where if you want a platform to talk to other people who know about this little thing, then yeah, you can absolutely stay in touch there. But it should be growing and it should be, you know, promoted as this big free speech platform. And I'm just not seeing the activity there.
Yeah, I mean, maybe at some, I mean, it's really tough. I think there's only a certain, I mean, just looking at the market now, it just seems like there's only a certain number of platforms you can have. And of course, everyone's like on Twitter and Facebook and all of that, Instagram. Even there, I don't know if I'm shadow banned. Again, I'm just seeing things sort of plateauing. But like on the other hand, Telegram, it's kind of weird where I just experimented with Telegram and I got 10,000 on there, but only 200 on Minds. And just so, yeah, I mean, unless there's a certain turn of events where they really started deplatforming people on Twitter, then people might, you know, migrate to Minds. But we'll see. It's not looking too great for Minds. And let's take our news break. We'll be right back.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines.
Tesla has announced it is recalling some 1.1 million cars in the U.S., citing a safety issue with the automatic window reversal system. British Prime Minister Liz Truss told the UN General Assembly that free nations should band together and act as an economic NATO to defend prosperity against the malevolent influence of authoritarian regimes like Russia and China. Donald Trump could be allowed back on Facebook in time for the 2024 election season.
The common housefly. Caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa. Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
I don't know if we talked about this, but just real quick, your reaction on how Canada is deciding to drop the vaccination requirement for people entering Canada and random DNA testing, COVID-19 PCR testing at airports, and make the use of the Arrive Can app optional by the end of this month. Are people breaking out the champagne in Canada? What's sort of your take on this?
I know somebody who's going to be traveling very soon, and he's very happy that, first of all, he didn't know about the Arrive Can app. I had to tell him, hey, you're going to get in big trouble at the border, and they're going to hold you up and possibly fine you if you don't have this. He didn't even know that. Then when I did tell him, he was like, oh, okay, I guess I have to do that. He was vaccinated. And then now I told him, well, I guess they're dropping it, you know, and then he was definitely relieved and happy. So it's one of these weird things that a lot of people, I think, if you're traveling regularly, you probably just sucked it up and went along with it. If you're a business person who's traveling or whatever, but the average person sort of got used to in the COVID thing to just, we're not allowed to travel, or now they think that there's no mandates. And so there's so much confusion around it. Border people in Canada were saying that nobody was using it. Nobody was prepared. They were constantly forcing people to install it at the border. And, you know, like, you have to do this. And they would be teaching people who barely know English, you know, how to use the app and download it and stuff. And it just held up the lines and stuff. And then there was a big lawsuit coming in the very near future related to it. And so it seems like they're going to try to drop it right before the lawsuit hits and then avoid the controversy of that. So it seems like they're just sort of kind of pushed into dropping it. And apparently there was September 30th was going to be the deadline anyway, where they were going to have to decide whether they were going to renew it or not. And it sounds like they're just not going to renew it, and that'll sort of work out for them. But Yeah, just confusion here. Nobody's celebrating because no one really understood what it was in the first place. And then there's a bunch of bots on Twitter that every time somebody was talking about it, the news story, there was 1,000 replies saying, oh, well, good luck now. You know, you're just going to have to fill out a bunch of paperwork. Oh, I found it very convenient. I love the ArriveCan app. And of course, we talked about last time we talked about this, about how it had 450,000 five-star ratings. And it's just ridiculous. The most highly rated app in the world. And no one likes it and no one uses it. So, yeah, it seems like they're just trying to drop the act now. And even news reporters are finally allowed to admit that it's a disaster.
I mean, if you just, I've said this before, if you just step back and look at the length, the fact, you know, the length at which our authorities, our government, which is supposed to be our, you know, our good government, our lizard rulers, I don't really believe they're lizards. I just joke with that. The lengths they have to go to lying, just lying. And I think it's unethical, probably illegal in some of the ways that they're lying, like using fake bots and these fake reviews to get us to use this stuff. That alone, for me, just should disqualify everything that they're telling us to do, everything that they're doing, that they're saying. It's like done. Because if it was something that was really good, really necessary, we wouldn't need that. Right? Mm-hmm. We would all be like, yeah, I'm going to get the app. I'm going to, yeah, makes sense. It's not making sense.
It's so funny that you mentioned lizard. I have to bring this up. I know we were going to talk about something else yet. I want to squeeze this in. Actually, this is a big story. You know, UNESCO, which is the United Nations Education Agency, just launched this new updated war on conspiracy theories. And one of the first things they cite on their list of examples is lizard people. And their example is Michelle Obama for some reason. I don't think anyone says Michelle Obama is a lizard person. They say that she's a transsexual. But I guess they avoid saying the real conspiracy theory and instead say something much more ridiculous that people are saying she's a lizard person. But yeah, this the UNESCO is coming out and trying to start this program to teach teachers in schools how to identify and combat conspiracy theories. And so that's very interesting to me. And it has a big quote here from Mark Crispin Miller as well. And so I thought you might find that interesting.
That's funny because I was going to mention, well, why don't I just mention that now, Mark Crispin Miller. He does great work, and it's again, we're talking about the COVID, the ArriveCan app. We're talking about COVID-1984, and someone I subscribe to his Substack, and someone said that he said that Vietnam ended not because of protests, but because the body count of soldiers was too big to ignore. He thinks the jab deaths will be so numerous that, like Vietnam, they will be impossible to ignore and might bring down the whole evil agenda. And I never thought about that. It makes perfect sense. It's logical. So that very well could be. And any thought on that?
Well, definitely to me, that's directly related. Like, he brings up Vietnam, but maybe even in better comparison is Gulf War, where you had the Gulf War syndrome, which was this mysterious illness that all these soldiers were getting. And the government denied and denied and denied that there was any connection with their experimental vaccines that they were doing on soldiers at the time. But then 1997, the UK government, which was also in the Gulf War, they did a new study, and they were looking at the vaccines and the anti-nerve gas tablets that they were giving soldiers. And in October 1997, they admitted that they had ignored warnings about these vaccines and that they were injecting British troops with unlicensed vaccines. And so you have that. I believe the Clintons were involved with trying to cover up the Gulf War syndrome and where it came from. And that was another thing where soldiers were being directly exposed to experimental things. And as that became more and more controversial, I don't know if it's backed up. I can't seem to find any stories on it from very official sources, but I was told that the records related to the Gulf War syndrome were in the Oklahoma City bombing building that got blown up, and they were all destroyed. Just like how there's all these critical documents in the Pentagon when 9/11 happened, there was a similar thing with the Gulf War syndrome documents and evidence in the Oklahoma City bombing. But it just reminds me of that, you know, certain controversies get to a point. I don't think they just admit ever that there's any connection. Instead, they might create some sort of big event or distraction or false flag thing to like the Oklahoma City bombing, which they pinned on those who were angry about Waco and Ruby Ridge and these other things, these militias that they were trying to target at the time. So they can have it both ways. But yeah, I do think that these things tend to end with a bunch of evidence piling up that you can't ignore anymore. And then there's only a question of how they're going to try to get out of it and change the conversation.
Speaking of changing the conversation, fear not, humans. The Global AI Summit begs us to trust our newborn digital overlords. So you just published a new stack, as they say, sub stack. This is especially the sort of writing that I enjoy from you. And we've been talking a bit about the global AI stuff. I was digging into the third day a bit today of the session. They were basically talking about AI and space and basically total information awareness, how they are building out these systems where they can just, it's insane, really, but they would be able to like see everything on the planet, geolocate, zoom in, find everything. And it's nuts, but sort of tell us about what you've been looking at lately, related to this stack.
Yeah, the big thing here is that we talked about this last time, but it seems to me that they're really trying, and actually they say themselves, they want to reframe the dialogue between technology, policy, and ecosystems to apply united AI to humanity's pillars. Now, whatever united AI means, I don't know, but it doesn't sound good. I guess they want all the different AIs to work together, not to have separate AIs, but they want to change the conversation. And so obviously so far, the biggest conversation around smart cities and so forth from the average person has been, this is going to be terrible. This is a limited freedom. Smart cities are just prisons and so on and so on. And so they want to change that. And so they got all these experts to come out some of it is legitimately educational. And I appreciate that they're coming out and actually explaining the difference between machine learning versus sort of a programmed AI system, and how, there are ways to do machine learning in a way that is perfectly fine and ethical and harmless. But once they start doing what you said, which is tracking all information and plugging in real-time data tracking from people's biologies and where they are, geolocation, all these things, the smart city idea, then you get directly into a godlike position of total control. And so the subtext, or rather the blatant theme of the thing, is to try to just reassure people that this will be a good thing. And not only will it be a good thing, but there's nothing you can do about it. It's completely inevitable. So you may as well try to help it and participate and do your part in helping to, what would they call it? Stakeholders, you want to become a stakeholder that participates in the process of the smart city development rather than fighting it, because you'll never win the fight against it. But if you go along with it and you say, hey, here's what I want from the AI, maybe you'll get a chance to, decide a little bit, how it plays out. So that's sort of their pitch to humanity here at this billionaire meeting place with the Saudi royals and all these European AI experts.
Let's jump to our second break and we'll be back. You can find Terry on Twitter at WolfPox, as well as on Telegram at WolfPox News. And we'll be right back on TNT.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Hurricane Fiona is a Category 4 hurricane. It is going to bypass Bermuda to the west. Bermuda will have hurricane conditions. But then it's going to hit the Canadian Maritime provinces, and it will be the most extreme tropical cyclone ever to hit Canada. And yes, it is going to be extreme. That's the thing on my side of the issue with me. I don't deny something. Most systems are not getting stronger, but this one will be. It will break every pressure and wind record for that part of Canada that's going to hit. It's going to hit on the weekend. In the meantime, storm is going to organize in the Western Caribbean, come up into the Gulf of Mexico, and we'll probably have a major hurricane hit in Florida next week. On CFACT, who I write for, I am informing Governor DeSantis he's got to get ahead of this for various reasons. And one of the reasons is because the supply chain has been destroyed by Joe Biden's policies. I'll get into that tomorrow. This is WeatherBell.com meteorologist Joe Bastardi for TNT Radio, asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Solar power is supposed to help the environment. Modern economies require power 24/7, not just when the sun shines. And storing power is very expensive. Peak electricity demand in many nations with service-based economies occurs late in the day as the sun is setting. And cloud cover means we can never depend on solar power. Photovoltaic solar panel production is very resource intensive. Coal is the primary energy source used for photovoltaic panel production. And China, the world's biggest coal producer and consumer, produces two-thirds of the world's solar panels. While solar panels have a limited life of around 2 decades, some fail well before then. But nearly all solar panels currently go to landfill, as the cost of recycling is so high.
The Green New Deal supports the abuse and murder of children in the Congo, mining for cobalt for the electric vehicle. We mandate that the truth be told. TNT Radio.
I love that break. I really felt like I was, it brought me back that experience playing that video game. Oh, I can't remember the name now, but I was in Africa. You're like in Africa and you can just kind of drive around wherever you like. Oh, I can't remember the name. That was many years ago, but, good quality stuff we have there on TNT. Just going back to your piece, there was an interesting section, AI Never, that was from the Day One plenary at the Global AI Summit in Saudi Arabia, where AI Never asks one central question: what elements of AI do we need to ensure are never exploited? Topics will range from data privacy to free speech, facial recognition, computer vision. It talks about the role of human bias, because they don't really get into it, but basically they want us to think that AI is some objective, neutral thing, which it is not. I don't think it will ever be. It's basically programmed, and anyone who programs it is biased. There's not anyone on the planet who is objective or neutral. Everyone has a bias. And I liken it to, even if you think it's a tiny bias, over time it's going to create a huge ripple effect. I mean, the simple example is, if you're the captain on a sailboat, you're crossing the Atlantic or something, if your compass is just a wee bit off, you'll end up like, you know, in the North Pole or something. So that's sort of how I view, you know, what's your sort of take on this AI Never? You say that you can't find the video of that section anymore. What's going on here?
Yeah. So the Day One English, what they call the plenary, which is the main stage presentation, they have the one that is not in English. You can watch the whole 10-hour video with Arab, you know, overdubbing, because they were actually speaking English on the stage, but the English version of that video is gone. They deleted it. But you can watch that with, I can't understand the English. I was trying to pick it up That I missed that part because the video was deleted before I could get to it. It was a 10-hour video, but they do have a section for AI never, and it is, judging by what they were saying leading up to that, they were sort of touching on it. It's all about trying to create a strong ethics framework and acknowledge that there is a huge danger of privacy violations and human rights violations, and how these things do accumulate over time if there's a little bit of bias. One of the funniest things is that they were trying to tell this room full of Saudi royals and investors that basically once you create your machine learning, you feed in hundreds of thousands of images into the AI so that it learns over time to recognize patterns, and therefore it can recognize a human face when it sees it in the real world because you fed it so much data. That's the whole point of something like, you know, Zoom calls or TikTok or these things that are always scanning all the faces. There are these video services. They're capturing your biometric data. They're recognizing different face types and stuff. And but they were saying, don't just hire a bunch of, you know, Saudi men to do this like they would normally do, because you'll just be training the AI to only recognize Saudi men. You have to get, you know, black people in, you have to get white people in, you have to get women in, you have to get all types of people to feed their data in. Don't just use your own scientists, because you're going to screw yourself, because when the time comes and you want the AI, you know, robot dog with a machine gun on its back to recognize and kill somebody, there's such a thing as being an invisible person to AI. The AI was never trained to recognize that type of face. And so, I don't know, maybe this quickly leads into some sort of, once this stuff starts getting deployed, you wear a mask of some kind and then, you know, the AI doesn't recognize you or something. But there's weird ways you can trick AI if it hasn't been trained properly. So this is the kind of stuff that I'm very interested in. I really wish I could finish watching the video, but they, for what it's worth, they do actually talk about how to try to avoid the science fiction sort of nightmare scenarios around AI. And of course, I just don't trust them. And even if the Saudi version of AI was legitimately trying to avoid that stuff, that doesn't mean that the Chinese or the European or the American ones wouldn't be, you know, going the other ways. So all in all, they were bringing it up, but I don't know how far they went in actually admitting how bad it could be.
Anything, do you think, I know before you've said that you don't think that the dystopian technocracy is, they'll be able to roll it out as they project to us, and probably not. It'll be more like, I always reference Half-Life 2, City 17, just a decrepit, sort of like the Soviet Union, just dreary things not functioning or working or frequently breaking down. And then you looked at how AI is basically fragile and can be broken easily by those who know how to interfere with it. I mean, I'm just wondering about if we were living in a smart city, the many ways we could sabotage, you know, the smart city around us, or find loopholes and whatnot. I guess as we move more and more into this system, we'll be thinking about this more and more and interacting in such a way. Any thoughts here?
Well, one thing that I thought was outrageous, I don't even know how they could pretend to say something like this, but the Saudi, I don't know if it was a prince or who it was, I got, you know, the names and titles I didn't quite keep straight, but he was talking about having 200 different smart cities in Saudi Arabia, in this whole NEOM region. So they've got the line, which is this huge wall, this vertical slice that's like a straight line where everything you need in life is within 5 minutes of walking distance. And it's this whole thing that apparently they're starting to try to actually build. There's a different one called Oxagon, which is built on a shoreline, and it is this big octagonal shape and has a river going through it, and there's no physical streets. It's all water, and you get around from point A to point B on water, apparently. But they want to have 200 different smart cities, and they're talking about, you know, basically experimenting with all these different things and getting more and more people to, basically the engineers and their families will live in these cities initially, And then they'll try to invite more people in, and then it'll be a prototype that they can export to other places. And so the level of ambition here is so comically ridiculous and impossible that it feels to me like they're trying to scam investors, which is what a lot of these things, I think that's the same thing with quantum technology. I think it's the same thing with a lot of these things. People think that just because these universities and, you know, researchers are talking about these crazy science fiction things, that that means there's a big conspiracy to actually make it happen. But it can also be that, you know, the royal family or the Saudi royals or somebody, they just have billions of dollars and they don't know anything about technology. And here comes all of these university students and people looking for grants and money. And they just promise them the sky. They say, yeah, we can do that. Sure. Just give us billions of dollars. We can make smart cities that are totally net zero and everything is controlled and monitored. Sure. Just give us more money in 25, 30 years. They're just planning for their future careers, right? So it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to come to fruition. I think they would like it to happen, of course, but that doesn't mean it's realistic. And anybody who knows about social software engineering would tell you that, you know, it's not that simple. It's never that simple, especially when you have hackers and you have engineers within the system that might be angry. You know, they can flip a switch and suddenly the thing starts going wrong. I just don't believe that they could ever control it that well. So lots of different motives that all converge whenever these things happen. One of the comparisons I always make is to ancient alchemy and the idea that you had these alchemists back in the day who would promise the kings that they could turn lead into gold and they would get all the money and funding they needed for their whole life. And they'd, oh, I did another experiment, king. We didn't succeed this time, but just give me some more money and we'll turn that lead into gold someday. And it's modern day alchemy. They can promise it, but that doesn't mean they have to deliver.
Yeah, just one more point I thought was interesting. I came across a tweet from a Chinese government official, consul general of China, saying how Chinese President Xi Jinping proposed what is called the Global Development Initiative, GDI, at the general debates of the 76th UN GA General Assembly. That was on September of 2021. So was that a year ago? And then she says, she goes on to quote some of Xi Jinping's remarks on that initiative over the past year. So this is from January earlier this year. So 9 months ago. It's called The Initiative, short. So the Global Development Initiative is just The Initiative. Is a public good open to the whole world, which aims to form synergy with the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development and boost common development across the world. China stands ready to work with all partners to jointly translate the initiative into concrete actions and make sure that no country is left behind in this process. Now, whenever I hear no country left behind, no child left behind, like in the under the Bush administration, the horrible. I read that as they have some totalitarian scheme, and no one will be left with freedom. This is kind of, and for me, it's like, okay, let's do the math. Let's parse this. We know for a fact, 2030 agenda and sustainable development is the doomsday death cult. They want to kill you. So if Xi Jinping has some initiative that he wants to, you know, synergize it with 2030, I don't see how that's any good, or the person behind it has our best interests at heart. You know, we just got less than 2 minutes left. Any sort of reaction to this?
When I read something like that, I think probably what's happening is that China realizes that they can't stop it themselves. And so they are just going to pretend like it was their idea, and they're going to just basically fold in the Belt and Road Initiative, which is their, maybe it sounds like the exact same thing as the Global Development Initiative. It's the same idea. And we know that the Belt and Road Initiative was already being framed as the potential green development and that they were trying to pivot to more of a sustainability narrative in the middle of that, and that's all kind of falling apart. So for now, for them to go and talk about this other initiative and say, well, we want to go along with Agenda 2030, actually, yeah, we like that. It's kind of like, you know, we're still going to try to do our imperialist expansion and take over these things and create all this infrastructure and deploy our military across all these countries, but now it's going to be green, so it's going to be good, and we like the 2030 agenda, so don't stop us, you know, let us keep doing it. That's what I take away from something like that.
All right, we're out of time. We'll chat with you next week. Terry from wolfpox.com, winterchristian.substack.com, on Twitter at wolfpox. Stay warm up there in Canada. We'll be right back after the break.